Hello and welcome to Monday the 28th of January 2019, iScience Radio Show. Today we'll be talking about women in science. We'll be celebrating female scientists, looking closely at the problems women face in the industry, and hearing the panel's thoughts on any solutions to those problems. This episode will also feature a fun game, so keep listening. I'm Gina, your iScience Radio editor. Kathy will be producing the show today, and I'm joined in the studio today by Katrina.
Hey.
We've got Lily.
Hi.
We've got Emily.
Hello, everyone.
And we've got Katie.
Hi.
And yourselves, dear listeners, please join in the show by sending a message at icradio.com/contact. We really want you to be part of this. So stay with us between now and 6 p.m. right here on IC Radio.
The radio show where we talk about science, we have fun with science, and we play some really cool records. This is iScience Radio.
But first, as usual, it's time to catch up with the latest science headlines from our news editor, Madeline.
This is iScience Radio
News.
Hi everyone, I'm Madeline, news editor here at iScience, and this week I'm here with Julia and Harry from the news team to give you a weekly science roundup.
First up, researchers at the Lunar and Planetary Institute in Houston claim to have found a 4-billion-year-old fragment of the Earth, which was collected from the surface of the Moon during the Apollo 14 mission back in 1971. The team believe the rock originates from the Earth, as it contains quartz, feldspar, and zircon, which are common findings on Earth, but rare on the Moon. In addition, the conditions under which it seems to have formed are consistent with those of early Earth, making its earthly origins the simplest explanation. An impact likely projected the fragment into space and onto the Moon, where it was buried by another impact and then excavated by yet another one 26 million years ago in preparation for its discovery.
Next, Chinese scientists have made clones of a gene-edited monkey to be used in the research of sleep rhythm disorders that are linked to depression and Alzheimer's disease. This marks the first time that multiple clones have been made from a gene-edited animal for biomedical research. The monkeys were born at the Institute of Neuroscience at the China Academy of Sciences in Shanghai, and you'll be pleased to hear that the program is reported to be in line with international ethical standards for animal research.
And finally, humans and animals alike will be pleased to hear that the heatwave down under has finally subsided in time for Australia Day. Over a dozen new records were set in a fortnight that saw temperatures reach as high as 49.5 degrees Celsius. Australia has recently seen a rise in carbon emissions, in part thanks to a federal government widely acknowledged to be led by climate change deniers, and many meteorologists are becoming increasingly concerned about the impact that this could have on the environment. For now though, the air temperature has reduced to a more manageable range, closer to 20 degrees.
And that's all we've got time for here. Tune in next week for more science news.
Thanks Madeline, Julia and Harry for another interesting week of news. Now I want to start today's discussion with some statistics. Sometimes I think this conversation can be outdated and overdone. It's 2019 after all. But at those times, the statistics always remind me exactly why we should be talking about women in science. So starting at GCSE level, girls actually outperform boys in the majority of STEM subjects, with 67% of girls achieving A star to C marks compared to 63% of boys. This was in the UK in 2017. For those who don't know, STEM is just abbreviation of science, engineering, technology and maths. So then at A level, girls represent 36.7% of entrants to core STEM subjects, and you can see that at that level it's greatly reduced. At degree level, 24% of people taking STEM subjects are women, and in the workforce, women make up 25% of the total STEM workforce. And the definitions for the STEM workforce are quite broad. They include architecture and town planners, but it's important to note that they don't include teachers like university professors. But in professors, the problem is even worse, with only 17.5% of women in the UK being senior academics. And that's actually in not just in science and STEM subjects, that's across the board. So it's not just an issue related to STEM. So now, obviously, in some within STEM, there's also great variation in gender differences, but some of the worst degrees for women participation is engineering, computer science, both at 12 and 13%. So you can see it's like a pyramid. People call this the leaky pipe problem because you're losing women slowly down the pipeline of education. And so, yeah, at GCSE, it's very even and girls actually do better. But by the time you get to the senior positions, there's a big difference between men and women. So it's worth saying that these figures are substantially better than they were 5 years ago, and there's definitely measurable progress. But given these figures, let's ask our panel, is everyone surprised? Or what are people's experiences with this?
No, I'm not surprised, really. I did psychology at university, which is quite a female subject. So I'd say it's about 70% female taker at undergrad, but a lot of our lecturers were male. And, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's very obvious, you can see.
Yeah, it's interesting.
In my experience, so I studied maths and physics at university, which, as probably expected, it had one of the biggest gender gaps, not only in terms of lecturers, but also in people participating. In general, the degree also dropped out a lot of people. So we started with like 75 and ended up with like less than 50 on the course. But there were about, I'd say about 20% or less were female. And in my first year, in an example class that we had to do, out of 20 people, I was the only girl, including the lecturer, that was giving it. And I feel like I'm a very strong person. However, in that situation, I just completely went into myself because it was just an unwelcoming environment that they were giving off, as much as it was about me not feeling like right to be there. And at one point, I passed someone a sheet or something, and another person in the class had to ask him to tell me thank you because he just wouldn't. Mm. And there are other like issues surrounding that, but that's just one of the absolutely minor experiences that I've had in terms of gender in STEM. And that's why I think it's very important that this discussion is being had, not only here, but with everyone in a majority of places. Because like I said, that's not even, I wouldn't say that's a bad example even, that's just, you get on with it and everything. But yeah, it's super important. And I know other people on the panel have also had.
Yeah, well, you say that's a minor example, but you know, I think it does make a big bit impact on you, even those little things. And it's sometimes quite hard to articulate like what impact it does have on you when you're like the only girl in the class. But there's definitely something there, and it's also like, why are there no other girls?
Yeah. and I feel like if you had continued doing a master's or a PhD in that field too, like little experiences like that, they would just be aggregating over time, right? And and then over time it all of a sudden feels like a bigger, you realize the aggregation of the discrimination that you faced, or the fact that you have been the only one, and that that's put you in a lot of different uncomfortable positions. And I'm sure that that's especially noticeable, like you said, in maths and physics. I mean, huge gender
I
gap
think
there.
I only ever had one female maths teacher.
Really?
In my whole time. And I think I had two female physics lecturers. Right. And I had a lot of lecturers. We did a lot of courses.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy.
Yeah, what other subjects does everyone do at degree level?
So I did natural sciences, which is where you have a combination of sciences, and I did biology and biochemistry and physical geography and archaeology, but I stopped that after, I mean, quite shortly, that wasn't really my thing. But so yeah, the biology is a pretty even spread, I'd say, and it's in some cases, depending on what modules you take, it's kind of like a female heavy kind of demographic. But biochemistry is slightly more male, and I can't really remember my geography lectures. I think they were pretty even as well. But yeah, I think that's just, it's different so hugely between what sciences you do.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, what you were saying about psychology, I think biology is one of the ones where there is a kind of a more of an even spread.
Was that in your lecturers or just in the
in my students? Yeah, no, sorry, not my lecturers. I had a few female biology lecturers, and the rest were male. All my biochemistry lecturers were male.
I also had a similar experience noticing, even just at one university, noticing the differences between different disciplines. I did an arts and science type undergrad degree, so I mean, huge differences, obviously, between my arts courses and my science courses. But even within my science courses, there were definitely more women in human physiology courses, in nutrition courses, but absolutely male-dominated in computer science and mathematics when I was taking those. So it completely depended on the discipline.
Yeah, definitely. I think generally anything related to medicine or like medical disciplines, it's really high for women. And then everything like physics and mathsy is male-dominated a lot. So yeah, I think everyone sort of experiences at uni, and we've got 100% girl panel today. So yeah, we're speaking from experience. And yeah, so we're going to play a song, and then after the song we're going to talk about maybe some reasons for this disparity you see in higher education. So the song we're first going to play is Run the World Girls by Beyonce.
We run the world
girls.
Girls, who run the world? 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 Girls, who run the world?
Gotta love that song. That was Beyonce singing Run the World, brackets girls.
It's better when you shout, isn't it? Who run the world?
Girls.
Yeah, definitely. No, it was great to get that energy going in the room. Had a little dance. We've actually got a listener comment at the moment, Lily's sister.
Yes, so my sister studies mechanical engineering at Nottingham, and so she has messaged in saying that she's in a lecture right now, which is quite naughty, but she said that there are 10 other girls in the room out of 120 to 150 in the lecture at the moment.
Ouch.
Which is crazy.
Less than 10%.
Yeah, she also said very boring lecture as well. Just nice commentary.
In case the lecturer ever listens, we've got some feedback for them too. Yeah, so that must be just so noticeable, and that's every lecture.
Yeah, no, I think it's...
I assume every day.
Yeah, I think it's pretty... It's like you said, engineering is one of the subjects that's really noticeable.
Yeah. So we'll go on to some maybe reasons for the disparity between men and women. Obviously, it's such a complex issue. It's not just one reason. It's lot many. So I've sort of summarized like four things that people say of arguments for why there's a massive difference between men and women in science at a high level. And first is biological differences, and this isn't proven, but it is a common argument, and we can go into that a bit later. We've got lack of representation. We've got hiring practices. Some studies talk about a bias towards hiring males over females in science, and there's also outright discrimination and sexism. So Katrina's looked into this one a bit more and maybe had some case studies, so I'll pass on over to her.
Yeah, so I'm writing an article right now for iScience magazine, actually, on the Me Too movement in STEM. And like we've talked about, the issue isn't getting women interested in science, it's the leaky pipeline, and a lot of people think that a big reason for that is sexism, discrimination, and harassment that women do face in STEM fields. And something that I found interesting in my research on this is that we've known for a really long time that this is an issue. There is academic research on harassment of women in science that I've found dating back to 1980. There's media coverage of principal investigators who had been prosecuted for harassing their juniors in their lab dating back to the early 80s as well. And so it's amazing that even the academic research has known very clearly about this issue for so long, and yet it's still such a systemic problem. Just to add to the statistics that we talked about earlier, a Pew Research survey from 2018, so this is in the States, but we'll have to take it as representative for now, found that the STEM workplace is really misogynistic, with over 50% of women working in STEM saying that they'd experienced gender discrimination in the workplace, including being treated as incompetent. 29% said that. 29% said that they earned less than men for doing the same job. 20% said they'd been disrespected at work. And this issue is clearly more pronounced because when women are working in a majority male workplaces, and also among those who had a postgraduate degree. So probably more pronounced among those working in academia. It's definitely, as we've talked about already, worse in some fields than others. There's a lot of research on outright discrimination, sexism, and harassment in field research, because those are really insulated circumstances, right? Where research teams are working together, sometimes in Antarctica, sometimes on archaeological digs, in really close quarters, away from home. And of a study that surveyed 666 people who had had field experiences in an academic workplace, 71% of women reported having experienced sexual harassment.
Wow.
Yeah, well, on field research, yeah. Which is shocking, and could be really frightening, and could make you choose to abandon that field of work, right?
Yeah, and it's horrible because, as you said, it just does rely on teamwork so much, mm-hmm. is going out into the field, and I think it would really, it must affect like the actual results they get, the dynamic in the group actually must result in effects on their work as well.
Mm. Oh, absolutely, yeah. And part of why this is maybe such an issue too is that STEM fields are very hierarchical. When you're a trainee, when you're in school, you're really dependent on your principal investigator. And so even in a teamwork environment, like you said, that has some messed up team dynamics, possibly because of sexual harassment, you might still be dependent on that person who's been harassing you for a reference, for future, for advancing in your career. And that's really scary, those power dynamics, because that makes it hard to change.
Did you look, do you know anything about what women can do if they experience sexual harassment?
Well, this is another really big issue. There are not a lot of effective measures that institutions, including funding bodies and universities, have been taking to prosecute and punish people who are found guilty, even if women do report it. So this is definitely something that I suppose in the era of Me Too is especially relevant right now, and organizations are becoming more aware of it. I don't have the stat on me, but in STEM, most cases of sexual harassment, the perpetrator does not see any consequences. So you asked me what they can do, and I don't know if I have an answer for that, because even women who are reporting it, even women who are drawing attention to the fact that they've faced harassment, discrimination, aren't necessarily seeing results from that.
And then you can lose trust in your institution and everything. And it does seem that the cases where harassment has been reported and sort of thrown into the media, stuff has actually happened, but it's sad that it has to be a big news story for the person to lose their job or for them to have any consequences at all. It has to be put out into the media, and not necessarily the victim of the harassment might not want that, but at the moment it seems it's the only way to bring real consequences and attention.
And to think why they're doing that for their own reputation rather than for the care of the woman involved.
Yeah, definitely. It's God, sad. And I feel like it's good to have these discussions because we can really focus on solutions now. And the things are getting better, we think. They are getting better. And this has been a problem for a long time. But the stats are getting better. Like, say, 3-4 years ago, it was about half the number of people, of women in senior academic STEM professions. So that's a huge increase, which is great. Perfectly. And so I think we want to move on to another song. And I want to say, before we move on to the song, please do contact icradio.com/contact and do write a comment if you agree with what you say or if you disagree with what you say. It would be nice to hear your thoughts. So next song we're going to play is Power by Little Mix feat. Stormzy.
Sorry, I feel like I totally dominated that.
Make him stutter, stop my engine, push the button, cause I'm gonna be coming first. Yeah, When them boys talk loose and tell you power's for a king, huh? You just play it cool and tell them power's not a thing. What? You look them in the eye and say, I know I'm not a guy, but see there's power in my losses and there's power in my wins. Independent woman looking shower in your bims. They call me Coco, but I'm Mike, you can't be powder in my skin. And you don't need to spend another hour in the gym. You know I'm blinded by his grace, but when you found me, I was dim. We'll be counting down the years, yeah, I'm about this. All them dirty secrets that we share, I'll clear the browsers. We the type to build on our careers and share the houses. You can be a woman and a boss and wear the trousers at the same time. That I ain't never letting go. But as long as I'm alive, then I'll be sponsoring your pride. You know there's power in the couple, let me compliment your vibe, girl.
And we're back. So that was Power. Love that one too. We got brought the energy levels back up in the studio. It was Power by Little Mix feat. Stormzy. So I wanted to talk about another argument people have for why there is a difference between men and women in the STEM, and that is biological differences. Now, there have been a lot of studies trying to figure out what are the differences between men and women, and can those contribute to the roles men and women have traditionally in society? And there have been studies on the brain found that men say are better at spatial geometry and women are better at emotions and social relationships, but this, I think experts do say that it's a big stretch to go from this to saying this is the reason why men and women behave like that in society. And it's not proven in the scientific world that that's a good argument. So my professor from the University of Bristol says that, you know, no one knows what these differences mean for people's ability to do different cognitive tasks. Though there is speculation about verbal abilities versus spatial abilities, there's no actual evidence that these stereotypes relate to the measured brain differences at all. Now, other reasons, obviously, women have children, they get pregnant, and lots of studies say that they, on average, globally do more housework than men. And these things could mean that women have less time for actual paid work, like their careers, and that's maybe why we see differences in the workplace. So what do you guys think? Do you think that's like a good, big reason, or what do you think?
Are we talking about the childcare?
Yeah, like childcare, thing? Housework and pregnancy.
I guess with what we're going to talk about, hiring practices, as well, it kind of links to that. You know, there's lots of research that shows, you know, if you're a woman at a certain age, people who are potential employers like have that in mind, thinking, when are they going to have a baby? And you know, so I think those two link, but explaining it, I don't think it does that.
Yeah, I think there's potential for companies to actually recognise that this is a thing that women have to do, and to be able to make them feel like they're being treated fairly in the workplace, because they have all these extra duties, could be a step forward.
A couple of things spring to mind in this discussion. The first one being that I definitely read a study or something about a woman wearing a wedding ring in interviews and not. Yes. Katrina's nodding. She feels it too. And it turned out that when she went to job interviews without the wedding ring, she was more likely to be hired.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's just another aspect of a woman's personal life being brought into her professional life, which she shouldn't have to face. And another thing as well, a personal anecdote, I won't name names or anything, but someone I know knows someone, and she's a woman, and she says that it having female applicants for positions puts her off because of their emotional stability.
Wow.
And as a woman, she projects what she feels that she goes through potentially every month that they will do, and that will affect their work. So that's a very controversial decision. Which I personally don't think I agree with in any way. But that goes back to the thing, the studies that you were talking about.
You bring up a good point that it's not just men saying they think women are worse at these things. Actually, studies have shown that there's no difference between men and women when they're assessing someone's competence, and it is just that everyone thinks trusts females' competence less than males. So you bring up a really good point that it's not just men.
I once did a implicit association test. Does everyone know what they are?
No, tell us.
So it's basically testing your implicit associations. That's not a very good way of explaining it. So basically you get shown a word and you have to link it to say good or bad. And you can have female and scientist or male and scientist. And I did one testing how well I associated females and science, and I did really badly, which is kind of surprising considering I am a female who studied science. And I champion it, but then implicitly, even in me, I had this bias. So we can't kind of blame,
yourself as well. It's so social. And I mean, Katrina brought up earlier this idea that women, there's not an issue of women having an interest in science. It's this leaky pipeline that goes along the way that's perhaps still culturally ingrained.
Yeah, I've done the implicit association test as well, and was so disheartened because I also did very badly. Badly.
In the way against how you wanted it to go.
Exactly. And so I guess I just chalk it up to representation, maybe, and what I have just always seen in science. And so even though women in science is also something that, I think about a lot and like a cause that I would like to champion.
Consciously.
It's still hard to overcome the representation that you see every single day.
Yeah, Lily, did you have something on representation?
Yeah, so I listened to a TED talk, I can't find it, but I will try to, a few months ago, and I just remembered it when we were having this conversation, and it was a woman who said that a potential explanation for why women are less represented higher up is that at a lower level of education, so kind of primary school level, kids are obviously taught by teachers across the board, so they're not necessarily, you don't have a science teacher and a math teacher, it's one teacher. And that also that kids at that age are more likely to kind of form a bond or as well as education, kind of a bond with their teacher of the same gender. And that I think this was in America, and that with female teachers, even they might have specialised in English and they go on to become primary school teachers, they're teaching science and they might be less confident, or they have a background in science, but there's still something about a confidence thing in female teachers at primary school level teaching children, and that is kind of then reflected onto the girls in those young ages. So she was kind of explaining it as like a perpetual cycle of confidence in, but then I don't think that explains it, because it still doesn't explain why.
But it could feed into that unconscious bias that people have later in life, for sure, like role models and representations. We've got a listener comment. Hilary says, I think this is to Katie and what we were talking more about at the start of the show, that when you're outnumbered as a woman, did you feel you had to overachieve to prove yourself?
Thank you, Hilary, for the question. I think yes. There's definitely this idea, even going into study maths and physics as a girl, that's a very niche case, but I'm sure for all of us, going in as a woman in science, you feel like you have to prove yourself to be there in the first place. And so I think a large part of also being the only girl is that, well, do I need to represent all of women here on my own?
Yeah.
So I need to overachieve in order to compensate for this gender minority. And I'm happy to say I proved them wrong.
Woo! Yeah, thank you for that. I think it's not only do you notice it when you're the only girl in the room, everyone else notices it too. And I think my friend who did maths at Durham, when she was studying maths and further maths at school, when we were at school together, I think all the boys at school were sort of like, just first of all, surprised and shocked that obviously there was lots of people studying maths, but they were like, this girl is so hot and she does maths and, you know, she's like a hot nerd. And I think it does get also fetishized a little bit, that if you're like brainy and beautiful.
And I think that's, again, that's just part of culture just generally, fetishizing like beautiful women, when that's great, like, absolutely, but also there's more to a woman than just her looks. And it's annoying that they can't just be like, wow, like, she's so smart, like, all this time and effort she puts in, they have to put that spin on it. It's unwelcome, I'm sure, by her as well.
I think she did feel very weird about it, because she'd moved from a school, an all-girls school, and then moved to mixed school for sixth form, and I think she was taken aback. But now she's studying maths at Durham, and I'm sure she's smashing it. Yeah, definitely. So I think we should move on to some solutions, or not solutions, or what we think that we can do to help this issue. So we're PsyCommons, we study science communication at Imperial, and communication-wise, does anyone have, like, any things that could help sort of contribute to this issue? Like, there's a campaign called WISE, which is Women in Science and Engineering, and that's UK-based, but it's basically saying, it's bringing the business case to people, saying that actually if you have more diverse companies with more women, more people of different races, it makes business sense. It actually, studies have shown that it increases revenue. And they, really strong campaign that have, basically a lot of the stats that I've got from them, and they've really honed in on the problems and the issues. They've got priorities, different priorities every year, and they're just working to increase the female STEM workforce. And it seems to be like they're doing a really good job. But yeah, I think like the transparency that they do it with, they really just lay the figures out bare, I think could be quite helpful.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you have an idea of those statistics, but you reading them out to me, like, that kind of felt, you know, it resonates. And yeah, I didn't know that all of those statistics before. So you have an idea, but I think, yeah, getting the message out there that there is a real issue, like, even just with those numbers, is something that can be worked on as well.
Yeah.
Another thing that we can do as PsyCommers, that you sort of referenced earlier in talking about the book Inferior, Dr. Jess Wade here at Imperial is on an amazing campaign to increase the representation of female scientists on Wikipedia, which is a huge issue because not nearly enough of the profiles of scientists on Wikipedia
are prize-winning women.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's just an example of how we as people doing science communication do have the power to help with the representation issue in the media through things like editing on Wikipedia, through things like celebrating the women who have participated in the research that we're discussing and we're communicating. And I think that there's a lot of power in that, in just naming the women and increasing their representation.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I did want to credit Inferior by Angela Saini. I've got a lot of my information and statistics from there. It's a great book and should all read it. It's big up. And well, I think we'll move on to another song, and then we're going to talk about pay gaps. Ooh. So this song is Flawless by Beyonce. We love Beyonce here in the studio.
Chardonnay's going touchdowns on your runway. I'm Texas forever like Bombay and I'm Rambo Dio. I'm Billy Rick like John Jack. I'm Camo. go down when it's $1 billion on an elevator. Up, round round in it, flossing on that. This diamond, my diamond. This rock, my rock. I woke up like this. We flawless, ladies. Tell them I woke up like this. We flawless, ladies. Tell them say I look so good tonight. I'm the shit. Everyone to feel like this.
Japanese and Indian, got Malaysian, got that yaki, that wavy Brazilian.
Them bitches thirsty, I'm Hungarian. Nikki BB eating diamond fangs, barbarian.
Yo, like MJ Doctor, they killing me. Pro before, I know they hope I fall. But tell them winning is my motherfucking protocol. Cause I score before I ever throw the ball. These bitches washed up and ain't no fucking soap involved. It's every hood nigga dream, fantasizing about Nikki and B. Curve delicious, pussy served delicious. Mayday, mayday, earth the bitches. Slap these hoes on they ass like we birthing bitches. The queen of rap, playing with Queen B. If you ain't on the team, you playing for Team D. Cause we A-listers, we paid sisters. This watch right here done phase blizzards. I confess I woke up like this. All this drank in my cup like this. All this ass on that flawless dick. Instagram another flawless pic. Flawless city with these flawless titties. I got all these hundreds, you got all the 50s. I'm with some flawless bitches cause they mild and pretty. Cause niggas love bad bitches that be on a grizzly. Throw that ass back, I be on my frisbee. Princess cut diamonds on my Disney. He want Monster Nikki in Sri Lanka. I told him meet me at the Trump Ivanka. I said, come here, let me show you how this cookie tastes. This, that, yeah, nigga, eat the cookie face.
And we're back. So that was Flawless by Beyonce, and I forgot to credit Miss Nicki Minaj. Credit where credit's due. And so we want to talk about pay gaps quickly, because this is an important part of the difference. And I want to say that there is a gender pay gap in the sciences, and on average 12% women earn 12% less than their male counterparts in the United Kingdom. And this is important to say that it's not women doing the same jobs that are being paid differently, because under the Equal Pay Act in the UK, that was from 1970s, that's illegal to pay someone differently for the same job. It's actually, the gap originates from that just men just have higher positions and they are therefore paid more, and women have the lower positions and are paid less. So I've got a stat. We're at Imperial College, and they say very explicitly on their website that they have a gender pay gap in their staff, and it says that their gender pay gap is 9.4%, which is below average, actually, I think. They're happy with that, but they say that this is a problem and they're working to solve it for sure. And the gap, more specifically, originates because it's actually in the lower three quartiles. What they call quartiles are just pay grades. So the lower three quarters of pay grade, there's a 50-50 split, pretty normal. But in the top quartile, it's a stark difference. It's 70% and to 30% women. So
it's a glass ceiling.
Yeah, it's at the top jobs that these things are happening.
It's funny you should say that they can't not pay the same thing, but if they slightly word the job contracts differently, they can you know, do that. I've just read a book by Ruth Davidson called Yes, She Can. And she spoke of her time as a radio presenter on the BBC about a decade ago. And she and her co-presenter, she found out that he was earning something like 25% more than she was or something. And so she had to fight her corner to get that rectified. And I think that especially in that book, Yes, She Can, it did focus a lot on the fact that, as you said, they've recognised it's a problem, but not much has been done as a solution to it within the 5 years or so that there's been movement for it.
Yeah, well, they're losing out, aren't they?
Exactly.
On all that female creativity. So we want to move on quickly to some just inspiring female scientists inside us. Everyone's prepared a little bio of their scientist, and then if we got time, we'll play a little game. That sounded sinister, but it wasn't.
We'll play a game.
Yeah, we'll play a really fun game. So, Katrina, do you want to start?
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about one of my women science idols, Rosalind Yalow. She's a biomedical physicist and won the Nobel Prize, actually, in physiology and medicine in 1977 for her role in developing the radioimmunoassay technique, which is an assay technique that's super sensitive and can be done in vitro to measure concentrations of substances in the body, like hormones and viruses and drugs. So it was, this technique was involved in a few really huge medical discoveries, including how insulin works in the body and the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes. But part of the reason why she's sort of my woman in science hero is her journey into science was really interesting. She studied physics as an undergrad, but then she's quoted in a bunch of places as thinking that any respectable grad school would not admit and financially support a woman at that time in the 30s. So she took a job as a secretary and only actually got into a university as a teaching assistant during World War II, when she was offered a job because the man who'd previously had that job went off to join the army during the war. And at that time, when she got that teaching assistant job, she was the only woman among the university's 400 members at the University of Illinois. So that's pretty amazing. And while she was there, she went on to earn her PhD, started doing her research in addition to her teaching duties, and later won the Nobel Prize. And another amazing thing about her is that in the 1970s, she published over 600 research articles in 4 years at one point, despite the fact that she had a family and two young children. So she is amazing proof that clearly you can do it all, and having a family doesn't not have to be a reason not to hire a woman, doesn't have to be an impediment to their career. She was a huge advocate for integrating her career into her life, into her family life as well, which made her able to do that, which I think is pretty amazing.
Wow, yeah, you can see my jaw hanging open there. What an amazing life.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a common theme, actually, with a lot of the females that we've chosen, that they do a lot more than just science.
Yeah, right?
Exactly.
who have you chosen?
So I have chosen Lise Meitner. So for those of you that want to look her up after the show, she is amazing. That's L-I-S-E and then M-E-I-T-N-E-R, Lise Meitner. And she was a physicist who was born in Austria in 1878. She fought against adversity to gain a PhD, but even then, when she started working as a researcher, she was unpaid and not allowed to use the labs or even the toilets. So she ended up conducting her research in a basement.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. When they were allowed females in the labs and to do research, she actually became the first female professor of physics in Germany. So that's quite extraordinary.
Really cool.
Yeah.
And then she went on to work with a collaborator, Otto Hahn. They were firing neutrons at uranium nuclei. And at the time, they thought they were trying to create a new element. But in fact, they had discovered nuclear fission.
Wow.
So that's the splitting up of atoms. But their work was interrupted when Lisa was forced out of Germany as she was a Jew, and it was around the time of the Nazi regime. So she fled to Sweden, where they still carried on their correspondence. And Otto was struggling to work out what it was that they had found. And she, not even being in the same country as the work, was the one that found that it was actually nuclear fission. And he was the one that got the Nobel Prize in 1944. And since then, the Nobel Prize Committee have, you know, called it unjust, her exclusion. And she's had lots of posthumous honours, including a chemical element named after her. And for those of you that are trying to, like, sing the song, I'll skip you a few skip you a few lines there. And it's meitnerium.
Oh, cool.
But going on from what we were saying about them doing more than just that, she was actually an X-ray nurse in World War One. And she was described as the German Marie Curie by Einstein.
Oh,
so
cool. I wish we'd sort of been taught more about these women at school.
Right? I have a book here that I can highly recommend. It's called Women in Science, 50 Fearless Pioneers Who Changed the World. It's some beautiful illustrations. And actually, a lot of what we learn at school in science is by these women.
Yeah.
Mm.
And we just don't hear about it.
Yeah. We don't
have the face. They're faceless. Mm,
yeah. Exactly.
Mm. Right, Emily?
So my female scientist is a modern scientist. So her name is Professor Sophie Scott. She's a professor of cognitive neuroscience at UCL, and her research investigates the neural basis of vocal communication. So she looks at voices, speech, and laughter. And she was elected a fellow of the Academy of Medical Sciences in 2012. But one of the reasons I've chosen her is she's also a science communicator, and she is really, really funny, which is fitting because she does work on laughter. But she does stand-up comedy. And she's presented the Royal Institution Christmas Lectures in 2017 entitled The Language of Life, which explored the topics of communication. And she also had a Horizon show on the BBC called The Science of Laughter with Jimmy Carr, which I would recommend watching, because it's very funny. But I personally found out about her because I went to a conference on science, pseudoscience and psychology when I was in year 12. And she was there talking about the science of laughter, and I just found it so captivating. And like I said, she does comedy, and she told us how laughter is basically trying to kill us, as it's the involuntary contractions of our intercostal muscles squeezing air out of us. So
sometimes when I laugh, I do feel like I'm going to
exactly,
die.
You can't breathe, so she, you know, watch out. And actually, it's one of the reasons I chose psychology as my degree, because I went along at the time that we were choosing, and I thought, this is so interesting.
Well,
so yeah, thank you, Sophie Scott.
Oh, so that, yeah, that's an example of representation, mm-hmm. really, making you feel like you can, or you want
definitely.
To do something.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, right, okay, I'll be quick. So the lady that I have chosen is Elizabeth Garrett Anderson, who was the first British woman to become a qualified surgeon and physician. She also is the co-founder of the first hospital staffed by women. She was the sister of Millicent Fawcett, who became a leading figure in the suffragette movement. And she, by chance, met a lady called Dr. Elizabeth Blackwell, who was the first female doctor to graduate in the US, and this inspired her to do the same over here. So she was not allowed entry into medical school in the UK, so she decided to enrol in nursing at Middlesex Hospital, where she attended lectures which were solely for men. And shortly after she enrolled, they decided to make it wasn't women weren't allowed into those lectures, so then she was kind of kicked out of the university. So she resorted to learning to speak French so that she could go to the University of Paris, and she graduated and established the new hospital for women, and then was appointed dean. And all her work paid off, and in 1876 female entry into the medical profession was legalized, which sounds like a crazy thing to a sentence to even say. Yeah, so it was legalized. And even after she retired from the medical her medical profession, she became the first mayor in female mayor in England. Yeah, I had to struggle to get my words out. I was blown away. Yeah.
But I think, like, we have so much to thank these women for. Yeah. They have gone before us and are paving the way today.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amazing.
So we have 5 minutes. We could just, I'll just introduce this little game we have. It's just a shame not to. It's a little card game developed by two students in the University of Exeter. I'll just get their names. Want to credit them? Right, while I'm looking for the names, I'll explain the rules. So it's basically top trumps. We've got some cards here in front of us with a female scientist and a photograph of the scientist. They've got four categories: innovation, impact, obscurity, and badassery. That's my personal favourite. And a little bio of the work they've done. So they're female scientists, and how you play is, say, one person basically picks a category, reads out the number they have in that category, and everyone has to read out the number they have on the top card.
Yep.
And whoever has the highest number wins. So should we try it out?
Yes, definitely.
Should we start with the dealers left?
Okay, right. So mine is Gertie Corrie, and I'm going to say obscurity.
Oh, obscurity. I've got a 9 for obscurity.
Oh, I have a 3.
I've got a 9.
Oh.
Well, I'm just going to do a shout out to my card. So Grace Hopper,
yeah.
She was a computer scientist, and her badassery score is 10.
Nice.
First off, however, her obscurity is only 5.
Okay. I've got a 10, so I'm going to take that one, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
would someone else like to read one out just so we can vary?
Well, yeah, with all the photos, it goes from like back in ancient times to modern times. There's modern photos down to little pencil sketches of Elizabethan, Victorian women too. And I think I'll go with obscurity again. This is Mary Somerville. Somerville was a feminist, mathematician, and an astronomer who correctly predicted the existence of the planet Neptune, discovered 4
nice
years
work.
Later. Yeah, so I've got 6.
I had Rosalind Franklin, who is not very obscure, so I've got a 4.
Uh-huh. I've got Dorothy Hodgkin, and she's a 2, unfortunately.
I have Rosalind Sussman Yalow, who is a 7. She had a career as a secretary to a leading biochemist, and she took advantage of university scholarships offered to women during the Second World War to study a doctorate in physics.
She was my favourite scientist.
Oh,
cool.
Okay.
I have... I can beat you all if we were all going for the lowest number. I have Marie Sklodowska, which does sound obscure until you realise it's Marie Curie.
Nice. Okay, I think that's all we've got time for the game, unfortunately, but you guys should check it out. It's called Women in Science, and it's made by Exeter students. So I think that was a good decision.
It's made by the Science Hour on Expression FM at Exeter University.
Oh, thank you. That's also a radio show. I think this was in 2015 that they made this game. But yeah, it's available for people to download free and cut out the cards and play with your friends. And it's just a good chance to learn about stuff like Margaret Thatcher's on here. She was a chemist before becoming a politician. Great. So I think we've had a really good discussion today. Thank you for everyone for being here and talking about something that can sometimes be quite hard to articulate and talk about it. So yeah, thank you for sharing all your experiences. We can't put off the end of the show any longer, and yeah, so thank you everyone.
Thank you for having us.
And tune in next week at about 5 p.m. when Hiller and Jason will be back.